Is Iran ready to bow to the will of the international community and rein in its nuclear ambitions? Those who see the glass half full point to Iran's commitment to open up a newly revealed nuclear site for inspection. Pessimists say Tehran has perfected the art of prevarication. My guest is Ali Asghar Soltania, Iran's ambassador to the International Atomic Energy Agency. Full cooperation or deeper international isolation? Which way will Iran go? Ambassador Ali Asghar Soltania in Vienna, welcome to Hard Talk.
My pleasure, Adam, at your disposal.
Simple first question then. Has Iran's attitude to the IAEA, the world's nuclear watchdog, and indeed to the Security Council, has Iran's attitude changed?
Well, Iran's attitude towards the IAEA has not been changed. This is in fact our policy. Which have been sustained, continuation of our full cooperation with the agency in accordance with our obligation and in accordance with the statute of the IAEA. But you have to distinguish between this one and also the issue of the United Nations Security Council. I've already in many occasions said the United Nations Security Council involvement in this technical matter have been counterproductive. There were no legal basis for it, and I don't want to go to detail of that. I've already talked in many occasions. Therefore, in fact, whatever they have done, it has jeopardized, in many cases, our conducive cooperative environment in the IAEA, and even it has, in many cases, also weakened the authority of the IAEA. Therefore, we advise them to totally disengage the United Nations Security Council with the issue of the IAEA and let the IAEA to do its own work in a technical matter.
Okay, so what I get from your first answer is that in your opinion, really nothing much has changed as far as Iran is concerned. But the reason I hit the theme of change from the very beginning is because Mohammed El-Baradei, the head of the IAEA, wants to believe that change is afoot. To quote him, he says, "I see that we are shifting gears from confrontation to transparency and cooperation, and I call on Iran to be as transparent as possible." Clearly, he doesn't believe you've been transparent in the past. The question is, are you prepared to be fully transparent in the future?
Well, one of the questions he mentioned, I was with him, in fact, during the press conference in Tehran. He was talking overall the situation. He was, in fact, addressing to the others that they should change from confrontation to cooperation. That is why they said the stage that we are now is changing the gear. As far as the work and our work vis-à-vis the IAEA is concerned, we have been always cooperative. At the same time, of course, in some cases, we have taken even steps beyond our legal obligation. And as you noticed, if you want to interpret what we have done for the last 3 months or so, yes, we have taken some very positive steps in order to pave the way for the talks with the other countries concerned to show them that we are really determined for the conducive environment to have a possibility to have a fruitful negotiation with all countries concerned for all global affairs, and also to show that we are working with the IAEA in the best possible transparent manner, and they better not to interfere and let us to do the work. That is why whatever we are doing with the IAEA is nothing to do with the 5+1 or 6 countries plus negotiation.
Let's take one thing at a time. We don't want to make it too complex, because it is obviously very complex. But let's start with something specific. We know, revelations the last couple of weeks, that Iran has finally come clean about a second uranium enrichment plant in Qum, or in the mountains near Qum. Now, would you acknowledge to me, in the spirit of full transparency, that it was a mistake for your government not to reveal the existence of this plant designed to enrich uranium for more than 3 years since construction first began?
First of all, I 100% with due respect disagree with you, because in fact, first of all, we don't have any legal obligation to inform about our nuclear installations before 6 months prior to, in fact, introducing nuclear material. And therefore, we have been following not only our obligation, even we have done it sooner. And this is a sign of cooperation and transparency. And in fact, informing, and as I said in my letter to Director General, informing him about this one well in advance, in advance of our obligation and in advance of the meeting in Geneva, shows a clear indication that we wanted to have a conducive environment and to work in a very transparent manner.
Ambassador, I respect...
I disagree with you. I'm sorry to say that 3 years or so. I just want to inform you that today also I had a meeting with the Office of Secretary, I mean the Safeguard Department. We are arranging the inspection. Therefore, I advise everybody to be patient. Let the agency to do its inspection and verification. And then you know what is the site and the detailed information about everything that we are going to give to the agency. So-called design information questionnaire will be given. The inspection will be made as it was announced in Tehran 25th of October. Everything is the right track. Agency is going to do its technical professional work. And the world would know that so many allegations and political noise was in fact counterproductive.
So some very specific questions on the Qum site then. First, on this October 25th inspection, you saying that the IAEA inspectors will be offered full, unfettered access, and that once they've been in there on October 25th, they can go in there whenever they want?
Absolutely. In accordance with the safeguard agreement, in fact, I had meetings and we have all arranged according to normal procedure. We are going to give design information questionnaire, DIQ, and they will be there and they will do routine professional work, DIV, design verification information, in fact, process. Everything will be done, and therefore we spend no effort that everything would be 100% transparent in accordance to our normal safeguard agreement.
Yeah, why on earth, when Iran already has a very expensive uranium enrichment facility at Natanz, which we now know is steadily upping its capacity to produce enriched uranium, why on earth do you need to build a second and indeed secret for so long facility at Qum?
I agree with you with your first question. I think this is a question for a very legitimate question. The answer is very simple. The answer is we have been continuously threatened in order our nuclear installation by military attacks or threat of attacks by the Zionist regime of Israel, and also during the Bush administration, what continues threat, and this is therefore in fact unjustified for any country to just ignore this kind of threats. Therefore, we had to have a contingency plan that in order to have a sustained enrichment program. And that is the main reason, and that is the reason the location and all these, for it was for precaution for any arm attack.
Therefore, sorry to interrupt, but you've just said something fascinating. You couch the need for Qum in terms of threats, in terms of confrontation. Let me just put to you the words of Jacqueline Shire, who's an analyst at the U.S. Institute for Science and International Security, an expert on nuclear programs. She says, in terms of a commercially viable, commercial-scale enrichment facility, it makes absolutely no sense from either a technical or an economic point of view to have a small facility in a mountain with just 3,000 centrifuges in it. Her technical conclusion is this, that plainly, that Qum site is tied to the need to enrich uranium for a specific military program.
I categorically reject this because perhaps she is not profoundly following the news or knowledgeable. We have said that this is a complementary to Natanz enrichment program, and we have the whole program is and aimed at less than 5%. And that this is, in fact, a complementary to the Natanz enrichment. Therefore, everybody knows, also all the scientists, that the 5% enrichment plan can not and will not and shall not be aimed at for high-enriched uranium required for nuclear weapons.
Well, okay, let me stop you there. If that is the case,
this hasty,
hang on. If that is the case...
I'm sorry, this hasty...
Well, sorry to interrupt, but if that...
just create a problem.
All right, but if that is the case, if that is the case, what you've just told me, why did Mohammad Mohammadi Golpayegani, the chief of staff to Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei, why did he say to the Fars news agency recently that the comm plant was an indication, his words, that Iran is at the summit of power? This new plant, he said, will soon become operational and will make the enemies blind. What did he mean by that?
Well, the matter is very simple, because in many cases they have assumed that by a threat of attack, this whole enrichment technology or enrichment achievement would disappear. I've said in many occasions, this is a very naive of the others to think about, because this technology is indigenous technology. It is in the mind of our scientists, and therefore any attack will not, in fact, prevent this kind of enrichment activities to disappear. The only thing is we have to have a safer, secure place for it and put it under the IAEA safeguard. That's what we are going to do. And this plant would be under 24 hours camera of IAEA's as it Natanz is. The only thing is that we, as all our officials says, yes, we have disappointed the enemy that they thought by just threatening of attack or attacking Natanz, the whole issue will be disappeared. No, that is not the case. Therefore, they have to be pragmatic to cope themselves with this reality that Iran is master of enrichment technology, and Iran is not giving up this technology, but at the same time, Iran is not suspending its cooperation, full cooperation with the IAEA. These realities, I think the whole world, or particularly these few Western countries, should cope themselves with this good new reality, and then we will have a better future.
The enemy, you say, is the United States, led by President Barack Obama, still the enemy?
Well, the slogans of change has created a hope for better future. We are still waiting for those changes, and the slogans will be translated into action. And we have to say that the new momentum and the new, in fact, the window of opportunity that Iran has opened, and we have had recently the meeting in Geneva, I think that this is a test of the will.
Do you think it would serve you well to stop using phrases like the enemy when you're talking about the people you're actually supposed to be negotiating with, according to al-Baradei, in a new atmosphere of cooperation?
I was interpreting and explaining what was said, and you were quoting me and tried to explain. The Iranians have been facing the hostility for the last 30 years. I said, bearing in mind that the enemies have been trying to, in fact, stop Iran to have any liberal right enshrined in the statute, they have to be cautious, they have to take measures in order to protect their sovereign right and to protect their achievement. That's what I said.
Whoever
wants to show that they are not enemy, this is the historical moment to show that they have a political will and good intention. Let's see that who is going to fail and who is going to pass from this examination. All of us.
Exactly.
Iran and other countries are facing. We are all should show vigilance and try to have a conducive environment. That is why we have taken very important steps, like a permission to IR-40 heavy water reactor, unannounced inspection, modification of Natanz safeguard, and all these, and also announcing these new sites altogether, and also what happened, in fact, the day before yesterday in Tehran, accepting the date of inspection, accepting the date of meeting on the for the fuel of Tehran research reactor with Americans and French and Russians with the IAEA. These all shows that we have a political
will and good intention. I take the point. As you say, Ambassador, it's an examination. You can pass an exam or you can fail an exam. And we will see over the next few days and months whether Iran passes this particular exam. One key element is going to be your announcement that you're prepared to send low-enriched uranium, you just referred to it, to Russia in the first instance, to be processed, to be further enriched and brought back to a particular scientific facility you've got back inside Iran. How much of your low-enriched uranium, and we know you've got well over 1,000 kilograms already, how much of it are you prepared to send overseas to be processed in that way?
We have announced that we have accepted, following, of course, a request on behalf of my government that I sent to Director General to reflect it to potential suppliers, for Tehran research reactor. Then we were informed that there is a willingness from the other side. Of course, they wanted the fuel, in fact, uranium, low-enriched uranium, to be taken and then increase the enrichment.
Ambassador, I want a simple answer. How much? What proportion? Give me a percentage.
I'm answering your question very carefully.
Well, I want... Never mind careful, just give me simple. What I want is a simple percentage, the proportion of your increasing stockpile of low-enriched uranium that you are prepared to send to Russia or France or wherever to be further processed.
The whole issues, including your question, will be discussed in the meeting 19th of October in Vienna, when, in fact, in Tehran, and announced by Director General also and the Head of Atomic Energy. Everything will be discussed 19th of October in Vienna in a meeting with the IAEA, including the other countries' representative. And us, of course, representative from Iran, we will all discuss the whole details,
well,
and we will announce.
You see, the danger is,
keep your curiosity, and then we will be informed very soon.
Don't worry, I'll keep my curiosity. But you know, there are some people, not me, but there are some people who get very cynical about Iran because you, for so long, have delayed and prevaricated and obfuscated when clear action would have sorted out so many complex issues. Why can you not just tell me now what proportion of your low-enriched uranium will be sent overseas for further processing?
First of all, do you appreciate this positive gesture by Iran accepting in principle this proposal or not?
Frankly, Ambassador, it matters neither here nor there whether I appreciate it. The question is, does the United States, do they appreciate it? And they will only appreciate it when it is no longer, quote-unquote, an agreement in principle, but when it is a hard and fast commitment that you can be held to and start to implement. And it seems to me we're still a very long way from that.
I said that these technical matters will be discussed. We have agreed in principle that this material will be taken and for them and to, in fact, increase the enrichment. And you know that, of course, we could have done it ourselves because we can have the capability to rearrange it for increasing the enrichment under the IAEA. But we decided to be positive and to welcome this and work with this, in fact, new proposal. And we are ready to have very technical, conducive meetings. And I am very optimistic that this meeting will be a very good one. And, of course, we have to be careful not to politicize these technical matters.
All right.
Let this meeting be held in a very constructive environment.
All right, Ambassador. You know what? We've discussed two key issues. That is access to Qum and also the enriched uranium being sent overseas. We don't have much time left, so I'm going to ask you now to be very brief. Give me as best you can yes-no answers on some very specific questions I have for you. The IAEA demands much more information within the remit of so-called alleged studies, information about individuals, companies, businesses, and scientific institutes, which the IAEA has reason to believe were involved in the weaponization program that Iran allegedly has been running. You say that you are not running such a program. If you're not running it, why not open up all of these individuals and companies and institutions to IAEA investigation?
Director General has already answered you in Tehran. There is no authenticity for this allegation, and also there is no classification of this document. This document has no authenticity, and it cannot prove, and the agency has not been able even to deliver those copies to Iran. The situation is very clear. We have done everything according to the work plan agreed between Iran and the IAEA. That matter is over. And these allegations only have jeopardized the constructive environment.
No, not at all. Why would they jeopardize a constructive environment? If you have nothing to hide, as you've just said to me, it's all nonsense. They happen to believe that there may be some substance to it. So just allay their fears by letting them talk to whoever they want and go wherever they want and allow them to come to the same conclusion that you've obviously reached, that it's all a load of old rubbish.
I have already done. I have been fully in charge and responsible for seven meetings in Tehran. We have done so. You are not aware of that. You can check whatever I'm saying with the IAEA. We have had seven meetings over hundreds of hours, and we have given the written response, all detailed information, and we brought the individuals and they have talked to in 117 pages. We have done everything we could, And they are aware of it, but because of the confidentiality, I cannot go detail. But you can quote me.
Well, I need this meeting
in Tehran.
Point taken, and I did say we've got to be quick fire at this point in the interview. One other key issue, undeclared sites. Al-Baradei at the IAEA wants you to sign up to the protocols which will allow his inspectors not just to go to declared sites, but also to search for undeclared, secret sites, which we may not yet know about. And goodness knows, after the recent weeks, there's every reason to believe there may be more secret sites in Iran. Will you give IAEA inspectors that right to go around the country looking for undeclared sites?
We were implementing for 2.5 years voluntary additional protocol. The historical mistake by those few countries, Western countries, getting involved in the United Nations Security Council, then our parliament passed a law that suspended this voluntary enrichment of additional protocol. This mistake, caused this difficulty, and therefore they should be blamed for it. If we were not transparent and we wanted to have anything to hide, why we were implementing additional protocol? And we were fully cooperating. Still, even if we are not having additional protocol in force, we have had over 100 unannounced inspection and 24 hours cameras are working. I assure you, we don't have anything to hide.
All right,
we would be proud, in fact, to inform our achievements in nuclear industry so that the others will come to the conclusion that there is a reality that Iran is a strong master of nuclear technology, but under the IAEA full scope safeguard.
I see you're a confident man in front of me, but it seems to me that you've got reason to worry as an experienced diplomat, because you know, and you called it an examination yourself, if Iran fails the examination over the next few days and weeks and months, you know it's not just the US now, but post Barack Obama, much closer relationship with Moscow on this. It is Moscow, it's the permanent five at the UN. Everybody is now talking about serious sanctions by the end of the year unless you pass this coming examination. You must be worried, particularly when President Medvedev says recently, quote, in some cases sanctions are inevitable. Are you worried?
Not at all. I'm more confident than ever because now the whole world knows that we have already passed this examination by taking such an important step.
Well, no, Ambassador, they don't know. They know that you're talking about
isolated.
It. You haven't actually passed the exam. The exam is about to come. You certainly haven't passed it.
No, the first exam was to make sure that we want to pave the way, and we paved the way for, in fact, the real test that it is ahead of us. And in fact, by doing whatever I mentioned to you, we prove it. And I'm very disappointed you use the word of isolation at the beginning of the word. We have never been isolated, in fact. Those few countries try to isolate themselves by these kind of things. We have been continuously supported by over 100 countries of non-aligned movement without any interruption. And all the statements have been documented in the IAEA. Head of states have been supported. This is not right to inform the public the information which is not correct. Those few countries, in fact, isolated themselves by getting involved with IAEA, and they came to conclusion that the sanctions were counterproductive. Trying to push Iran in the corner was not working. Therefore, let's be hopeful and look at, as you said, half of the full of the glass. Let's all of us try to protect what we achieved.
I think we can agree.
For the future.
We can agree on the merits of being hopeful. Ambassador Soltanir in Vienna, thanks very much for being on Hard Talk.